don't know about this.
And one of the shows is called The Social Movement, and it's about creating businesses for social impact. So the crux of it is you've got 4 days to change the world. In teams of 10 people, you're given a social cause. And in 4 days, you've got to create a sustainable business, raise investment, and pitch it to a panel of judges. That's the Social Movement.
Where can I watch this? This sounds amazing.
It comes out next year. It was supposed to come out this year, but coronavirus has, you know, been a problem. That blip that we've had this year. So it comes out next April. But okay. I'll send you, actually, do you know what? I'll send you a link to
put it in the chat stream there, because everyone, because we're live now and they've just eavesdropped in our private conversation. But they may as well be aware of this, which basically, Victoria, everyone, has been telling me that she's actually a TV producer and she has some sort of reality TV thing happening next year. I didn't even notice. A revelation. You're going to share that link to the people here and we're all going to dive in and take a look-see, right?
100%, 100%. I'll do it right now. I shared a kind of trailer today, so let me grab it. But yeah, look, it's about bringing CEOs and entrepreneurs together, putting them in teams for a cause that aligns to them personally in some way. And over 4 days, you have to create a sustainable business, raise investment, and pitch it to a panel of judges. And you get 4 days to do that. So it's like the most intense MBA course of your life. You create a business at the end of it with people who you share that experience with.
Are you committed to do the business? I mean, you are committed to do it.
That's the point. Yeah, that's the whole point, right? This isn't The Apprentice. This is actually about creating real businesses. So that's the way it looks. I've just dropped the link in there. And that's just something I posted today from somebody that will be on season two. So... Yeah,
it's season two already. I can't believe I'm so far behind the times with this.
No, season one airs in April next year, and season two will air in probably October, November next year. So coronavirus has just knocked us back, everyone kind of gets these days. But
indeed. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm seeing a whole new side of you, Victoria, which is amazing. So I definitely want
social
to
impact. That.
Totally, this is it. I mean, I don't watch TV either. Maybe that's part of the problem. I've got this. I'm going to get into it anyway. Now that I know you and you're going to put this out, then I'm thinking, hey, Victoria's show's on. I'm definitely going to watch it.
Amazon Prime.
I'm a subscriber, so we're going to be there.
Oh, there you go. All perfect.
There we go. Anyway, welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on air. It's episode 64, I think. Episode 64. We've got an amazing show for you today. We are talking how to manage massive volume of job applicants. God damn it, you put an advert out, you get thousands of applicants coming in. How the heck are you meant to manage that? That's what we're going to be talking about. We've got some amazing guests with us. Bas van der Hartard is going to join us. Ben Gledhill from Thames Water is going to join us. And hopefully, cross fingers, Modi Ara Klomp from Amsterdam. She's gone back to the Netherlands, actually, for a holiday, but she's going to tune in from Amsterdam, I think, from us. And join us there as well. She works for Amazon, obviously used to hiring huge volumes. So it's going to be a super exciting show. But before we kick off, a quick word for our sponsors today. Our sponsors are Indorse. They are, you know what, Indorse are a super interesting business because they started off as like a tech assessment tool, but they've built all kinds of new products since that time, including one that is designed for remote working and software engineering. So they've basically built a tool which helps people monitor the mood of your distributed engineering team, which I thought was really quite useful and very clever. Integrates with Slack, integrates with modern technologies. So if you had a co-located team and suddenly you need to actually interact with those people and understand how they're feeling with the new distributed world, check out this new tool. I think it's called Metamorph, should I say. You can go ahead, check it out, 14-day free trial. I'll just share the link in the chat stream. Okay, very quickly, sound check, everybody. I think everyone can hear us on Crowdcast. Please say hello if you can. We are also multicasting on LinkedIn. So if you're one of my very few connections and followers on LinkedIn, can you please just say hello, Hong? I can hear you. Just so we can check that the audio is working okay. Got some kind of elves in the background helping me out with fixing things if they don't work. And also we're broadcasting this on Facebook. So if you're in the group and you're watching this, have I actually gone live in the group? Yes, I have. Then please say hello and let me know you can hear me there as well. Okay, cool. Looks like we're good on Crowdcast, which is fantastic. As usual, super excited. I'm super excited on Fridays anyway, but I'm even more excited today because once again, Adam Gordon has been upgraded. Yes, he has. And he's been upgraded by the magnificent Victoria Rush. Victoria, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, thank you. It's always fun to join in. I don't know how we feel about the upgraded, but we can let other people make that decision.
Significant upgrade. If you agree that Victoria is an upgrade and Adam, please comment on the stream and say, yes, we agree. Victoria is an upgrade. Even Adam would agree with that. He's probably watching as some sort of fake profile, feeling immensely jealous. Anyway, Victoria, let's talk a little bit about you before we dive into it. So you're a TV producer, but you also do recruitment marketing, you do podcasting and stuff like that. So give us a quick intro as to what it is you do so that the folks who don't know you get a bit of an idea as to the other parts of work that you get involved in.
Do you know what? I keep getting asked this question and I don't know how to do it. I haven't worked out how to say this really quickly. So high level overview, like you said, host a recruitment marketing podcast. It's everything to do with marketing a recruitment business. It's everything to do with attracting candidates, attracting talent, employer branding. Thanks for the link to my LinkedIn there. That I do independently. And then I'm also director of operations at Red Knight Studios Company. If you heard us at the beginning, we are creating TV shows for businesses. It's everything to do with building a business, attracting talent, talent acquisition, everything like that. But on very much focused on entrepreneurship and motivating teams and everything in that sense. And our flagship show, The Social Movement, is 4 days to change the world. So teams of CEOs and entrepreneurs building businesses to solve the global social issues, everything from things like we have right now, 4 days to end racism, 4 days to solve a global pandemic, 4 days to stop sudden cardiac arrest. We're talking the biggest things that impact our globe right now.
4 days to sort out Hung's hair.
Yeah, do you know what? I wanted to bring back to that. Colin put a link in a few minutes ago to an Amazon hair clippers for you. So I agree.
I have the clippers. I just don't have the courage. I don't have the courage to do it. I mean, it's got to be
when this is over, why don't we live stream cutting your hair?
All right. I think I need the encouragement. I don't think I can do it on my own. I need someone to guide at the back. Like, how do I do the back? You know, it's like hard. This is great stuff, Victoria. We always start off with a bit of reviewing on the Brain Food. So I wondered whether you had your time and your busy schedule to look at Brain Food last week. If so, what was interesting for you in particular from last week's newsletter?
There's a couple of things. The first one was the automated emails, the discovery work emails that came up actually, of building email lists for your potential clients outside of just using LinkedIn. Being honest, back in the days when I was in-house in recruitment agencies, I thought this was a well-known way of recruiting, actually understanding how to build email addresses from clients. You know, I could probably tell you 10 or 20 email formats for some of the biggest pharma agencies in the world, because we knew the structure inside and out. It was something that was passed around among teams to understand how to get hold of clients. GSK have a really good system where they put the middle name of the first letter of a middle name in the middle of the email. So how hard is that to just guess someone's email as a recruiter? I think it's a game changer for anyone who wants to actually do it properly in terms of trying to break into a client. You can reach so many more people by understanding just how to build email addresses and also how to use Boolean searches. I feel like we talk about it a lot, but do people really know what or how to structure a Boolean search properly? As a marketer, I do. But when would a recruiter ever know about sort of building what would look like essentially code?
Yeah.
So I find that really interesting.
Well, you know what? I've just shared the link into the chat stream there. Boolean Strings. That's Irina Shamaiva's blog. It's definitely a must-read blog. I think if you're a recruiter still at the operating, at the coal face, you know, if you're still finding candidates and sending emails, you have to follow Irina, basically. Yeah. But she's constantly coming out with what I call do-it-today tips. Like, you don't have to go and, like, figure it out for, like, weeks. She'll literally say, hey, listen, here's a one-page post. Have a look at this, and you could just implement this now, and then today you'd be better. So check that out. I've just shared the link in. It's just basically some logical thinking and some tools and some basic practices on how you can combine a bunch of platforms and just get a lot of email addresses from people you might want to message. So go ahead and do it. Okay, what else, Victoria?
This one's probably more topical right now, and actually the Twitter thread by Adam, I find it really interesting, and I love the way he's broken down the comments from people on his thread, just about his post. So to give some context for anyone who doesn't know it, he talked about a post he shared about recruiters encountering racism from clients, hiring managers, even colleagues by the looks of things, and he shares some of the really interesting comments he had on that post. And just going through it, you can see the unfortunate but very true institutionalized racism that is so prominent even right now. And we probably have ignored it for many, many years, or we've been able to kind of hide or shy away from it at least. I know you hear one comment here and there, you might just think it's a one-off, but actually when you put all of that together in one place, it shows how much, just in terms of, there's one comment here I'm just looking at that's, you don't want a candidate or of color or homosexual, and a manager would eat them up. What does that even mean? You're making a huge assumption based on something that's completely irrelevant from my perspective, either color or sexuality, when actually it's personality that's important. And it's the personality that would get to essentially eaten up by a manager rather than the color of their skin or their sexual orientation. And it's eye-opening to see it all in one place.
Yeah, it's, by the way, Adam Karpiak is another must follow. He's probably one of the funniest recruiters on Twitter. I don't know whether you follow him on Twitter at all, Victoria, but he's so hilarious. He's an operating recruiter. I think he recruits accountants or something. So he's actually not that interesting in terms of his particular sort of segment that he does. It's not sexy, so to speak, but his commentary and observations are so witty and so accurate. That he's a much must follow character online, and he basically did something last week, which was basically compile a poll on, look, what have you encountered from clients, like recruiters, what instructions have you received from your hiring managers and clients that you would deem racist or sexist or some other thing. And he just compiled these things, and not only was it sad to read, but it actually reminded me, actually, because in my recruiting days, I of course had received such instruction. I absolutely received some instruction, hung, I want a woman for this. I thought, okay, why is that important? But that was the instruction. Or hung, yeah, no blacks. And I was like, don't say that to me, number one. Don't say that to anybody. Like, this is now, rewind back maybe a decade ago. So hopefully things have moved on. But just from what we've seen lately in the news and everywhere else, obviously we've got so much further to go. I thought was a very important contribution from Adam there. Okay, one more thing, Victoria, before we bring our guests on.
Yeah. Do one more.
Yeah, one more if you got
it. No question. Sorry. Yeah. I just thought you were going to keep going. That was a really awkward silence for everyone. Sorry. The other one was automated outreach workflow for LinkedIn. So I find this kind of approach to outreach, I struggle to believe that it's the right way to approach people on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of automated connections and messages that they feel automated. It's obviously just because my job title says Director of Operations at Red Knight Studios. People approach me about how they can help me optimize my business and have less overheads and this kind of stuff. They have no idea about how our business is structured. And actually, if you spent 2 or 3 minutes looking at who works for us and where we work, you would know that I have no physical office in London because we work all over the world. Our business is spread across 5 or 6 continents, with people in the US being in completely different states. So I do understand that there is a need just to obviously reach more people faster. But to be honest, I'd say smaller lists and more targeted approach.
Yep. I mean, I think that's very fair. There was a debate I'm sort of involved in an online group on Facebook right now, Recruiters Online, really great group. And it was exactly this. It was one of our previous guests, actually, Amy Miller, was saying, hey, listen, I just received this, clearly automated. And it's interesting because obviously we're both the senders and recipients of this. I mean, it's not something that's uncommon. I think you did a poll on LinkedIn, like who do you get automated messages from? Recruiters, salespeople, marketers. I mean, recruiters would feature very heavily amongst the voting, I would imagine. But there are ways to do it better. And the link that you picked out and I've just shared is a fellow who basically said, look, here is a way to do it. And I think mechanistically, it makes sense in terms of how to follow it. But the main thing you got to think about is the data that you're using accurate and is the messaging right? Because those are the things that are going to make the primary difference. And of course, you know, I think you can have a philosophical and practical argument against this. As a friend of mine actually posted a post which might make the newsletter on Sunday, which is about you shouldn't do any automation at all. Because ultimately it creates a bunch of noise, and even if you might feel successful by getting that one person, you're not seeing the 99 people that you really hacked off.
I'm really big on that. It's I have a huge kind of bugbearer for me is when recruiters send mass messages from databases going, well, 3 people replied and I placed one of them, so it's a success. So you're not looking at the 97 people that didn't reply, that you pissed off, that don't want to talk to you again. And you're kind of looking at the smallest win just because you saw the email reply. You didn't look at the attempted unsubscribes. You didn't look at the people who blocked you, the people who never want to work with you again because you don't listen to them. And I think because they can ignore it and they don't have to see it, that they it's very easy to pretend that it was a win when I do believe it's actually a greater loss.
Yeah, it's a kind of an invisible loss, isn't it? Like it doesn't register.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Yeah, people haven't fed back to you because the easiest thing to do is ignore it or just to click the spam button or to delete. That's the easiest thing to do. And you're only seeing those small wins as wins when in fact, actually, you've actually caused a massive disturbance in the force, so to speak. That's really upset a bunch of people, which... Yeah. Actually, it might be new business development in general, you know, making all these sort of calls, emails out and all the rest of it, closing one customer and thinking that's a win. Well, actually, what about all of the wake that you've created that's caused negativity in amongst all of this environment? So anyway, very interesting. Thank you very much for that, Victoria. Let's get on with the other side of this, because we're talking about outreach right now, but actually this is a different problem for the topic of this show, which is... Yeah. What happens when you get an overwhelming number of people coming at you? Like, how do you pass all of that? And you and I, we're not experts in this. I don't know about you, but in your recruiting career, have you ever done any volume recruitment?
I haven't, but I was doing some research on this the other day, and it's like people are applying for 8 times more jobs than they were before the COVID lockdown because they're not being targeted in their applications. There are so many people desperate for work, and I do understand that. But they're applying for everything they could possibly be considered for. The in-house recruitment teams are finding themselves inundated with 30% more applications than they'd ever get. What do you do with that volume? How do you manage that volume? How do you manage? We all know that feedback is difficult for recruiters in-house and in agency. Well, how do you manage that level of feedback if you have nothing in place to automate it other than like a broad bean red flag that just says, oh, you've not been selected? which is probably just does just as much damage as not getting a response.
This is kind of what we need to talk about. Like, what I want to talk about. In fact, let's get one of these guests on here. So we've got Mo, who I can see, but we've got Bass and we've got Ben. We're going to probably get them on in turn, actually, to make it easier. But let's get Bass on first. I'll let him introduce himself. You know, everyone should know who he is. But I'm interested from his side, from the assessment point of view. So you've got 100 people. How do I convert those 100 to 10? There he is, Bas van der Hattard. How are you doing, Bas?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Good to see you, man.
Good to be here.
Have you guys met Victoria, by the way? Victoria, Bas, have you met?
No, we haven't.
I've seen her on your show before.
Yeah, well, Victoria steps in whenever she's available and can kick Adam out. So, you know, when I get the opportunity, that's what I go ahead and do. But Bas, let's talk about you for a second. I mean, for people who don't know you, can you quickly just introduce yourself and what it is that you do?
Well, one question first. I thought Mo was going to be the co-host. I thought this was going to be an old Dutch session.
Mo is an expert. She's going to be a guest here. She knows what she's doing. I mean, not to say Victoria doesn't know what she's doing, but the hosts almost
I can go, guys. I can go. Yeah,
Most people don't know is that Hung is actually technically Dutch. He has a Dutch passport. And Mo is Dutch. So I thought this is going to be an old Dutch brain food, which is a unique situation. I mean,
once in a lifetime. But Bas, let's get on with this. Who are you, man? Tell people, man.
I'm Dutch. I'm a Dutch consultant. I help organizations recruit better, and I used to help them get in more applicants, mostly by improving corporate careers websites, which is basically the turning point, the place of conversion, as far as I'm concerned. That's usually the most overlooked, interesting place to invest your money because, well, all your marketing spend is going to be either denominated or a multiplier or denominator on all your other marketing spend. So that's one of the things I used to do a lot, and I still do for those who have problem getting people in. But then I figured out that we are actually getting in so many applicants already, and everybody's still complaining about the quality of them. And then I met some organizations like Arctic Shores and later Cognizant and Brains First, who are all showing me that there's so much more talent actually applying, but because we look at a resume, we're not seeing the talent. So these days I'm helping organizations recognize talent that is already there, that is applying, and using modern technology.
Let's talk about the technology, Bas, because I think that's where you actually have a very acute sort of awareness of landscape generally in terms of the categories of technology that can be used to filter candidates. I wonder whether we could just touch on this very quickly. Let's say I've got an advert out. It's hitting my website. I've got 10,000 people hitting it. How do I get that down to a manageable number? Because you cannot realistically expect any number of recruiter to literally go through manually screening this. So what kind of types of technology, I'm not necessarily interested in brands at the moment, but what types of technology can help me get this number down?
Right now, I would recommend two types of technology. The first is game-based assessments. So basically, have them do games. And within the games, there is actually, again, two different types. One is more cognitive. That's basically different types of intelligence. And to be exact, we have 16 types of intelligence. So it depends on what do you need for your job. Or psychometric. Basically, who are you? What do you like? What's your character traits? The other one, and this they're only able to do psychometrics, is linguistic analysis. Basically, the words you use are very related to your character.
In the written sense or in the written sense?
Written and spoken, you could actually... If you throw all of your brain casts and filter out all of Hung's words he used during all of Brain Food lives, and you throw that into IBM Watson's character assessment trade, you would get a perfect or 95% character profile from Hunley.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wonder, so you are telling me that one of the things that you would try and implement when you had a high volume situation is to try one of these techniques to, because it's not only volume management, but you've also got to assess the talent, right? And we know that looking at the CV is practically impossible in this case.
And the beauty is you'll actually get higher quality of hire. The quality of hire increases because you're actually looking at what you should be looking at. For example, and I think Victoria just said this already. She said, listen, we should be looking at the personality. We should be looking at the traits of the people. You know, you said it from the marketing perspective. You need to look at who's already in my team, how autonomous are they, et cetera, et cetera. We should be looking at who's the person. So you'll actually see the quality of hire increase when you're not selecting a resume anymore.
So you're saying, basically, as I understand it, Bas, actually this high volume scenario might kind of force you to adopt a better assessment sort of criteria, because, you know, the idea of looking at people's backgrounds, let's say, which is traditionally what we do with CV, isn't it? We look at...
Yeah.
Do we recognize the name of the university? Do we recognize the name of the employer? Also, of course, we then apply our own layers of bias on that. So I don't like this guy's name because it's this indication, or, you know, I don't like this person because this is a man's job or whatever it is. Whereas if you go through some of these non-biographical type of assessments, you can also potentially remove some of these first tier biases, if you like.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, if you look at the CV, we all probably know where it came from, right? Leonardo da Vinci was the first one. But his CV was actually not, he said he was an inventor. He added his inventions to the CV. He just added the drawings. He added the technology. He showed his quality. That was his CV. Now we're just saying, listen, I invented stuff. And nobody knows if it's good or bad. You're just going to say, listen, I was a recruiter. Nobody actually knows if you hired quality people or if you actually hired somebody.
I totally get what you're saying. It is a matter of, I mean, I tell you what, Danielle has just mentioned something really interesting here. So let me just address this. By the way, folks, if anybody's got any questions, please ask them in the ask a question section. That'll help us get to it. But I'm going to jump in and pull this out of the chat stream just now from Daniela. And she's saying, hey, if you could change your ad job description in any way to deter candidates from applying, would that be, what can you do? And is that a good idea? Some people are big proponents of this. I remember people like Lars Schmidt, Bill Borman, you know, they were always, in fact, even in employer branding side, Victoria's super relevant to the stuff that you've done as well, is that actually you need to like repel candidates as the employer branding is as much about saying this is not for you as it is to say, hey, come and join us. So forget about targeting volume, number one, actively deter people on your job description. Good idea?
Depends on how you're repelling them. If you're repelling them by being honest about your corporate culture, yes. If it's what I often see is it's repelling because, well, basically we implemented Taleo and you need to jump to 300 hoops before you can actually apply, that would actually give you usually a lower quality of candidates. So what we're actually seeing is usually the way we repel them is not very smart. But being honest, I love the way, and this is like a decade or more ago, how McKinsey repelled candidates. They actually gave them videos of what it was like to be a McKinsey consultant, which basically showed you it's a 12-hour workday. If you're not willing to work after dinner when you put your kids to bed, they literally had a woman who said, you know, I love McKinsey. They're so good for my family because I can go home at 6:30. I can have dinner. I can put my child to bed at 7:30. And of course, I'll need to work that evening, but they do allow me to put my kids to bed. And this was a repellent, but in a completely honest way, you know, They were very early.
Wow. Whoa. There's so many things to say about that. I mean, holy crap. I totally get what you're saying. The honesty is important, right? You can literally say, you need to show who you are as a business, but then you kind of run into all kinds of inclusion issues as well, don't you? Because suddenly, I mean, I guess this is what you're doing. You are excluding people. So this is maybe a fundamental conundrum of recruitment, is that it is an exclusionary exercise. You are saying, it's not for everyone.
But it isn't for everyone. The problem is, what we usually do, what McKinsey used to do, was say, listen, it isn't for young mothers or for women starting the early 30s, because they will be young mothers, not even questioning if they have a child's wish.
You know what, on this topic, I think there was some report on this McKinsey thing. I don't think it was, I mean, I'd be interested to know whether it was as explicit as that. And if it was, Baz, please dig that out somewhere and share it, because I'd love to see it.
It was behind closed walls. It was taught to me by one of their applicants, actually, who taught, you know, they never released anything of this publicly.
It was. Wow, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Okay, one more idea on deterrence, Victoria. Let's go to you. I mean, what are your thoughts on doing, I wouldn't say similar to McKinsey, let's park that as an example, but what's the idea behind this? Be honest with what it is you do, deter people, and then how do we balance this inclusion dimension, or do we actually have to, is it a trade-off? Like, we can't have both of these things here.
I don't think you should include everyone. I think that's the whole point. If you're from my perspective, you're creating an employer brand and you're trying to hire a certain type of person for a certain job, you don't want everybody to always want that job. You just want a certain type of person for that role. If you're a developer, you want developers interested in the job. You're a marketer, you want marketers interested in the job. They're two completely different types of people. You have to appeal to them in different types of ways. I think I can't remember who spoke to this about. I think it was Dan Kelso, and he said, you know, if your employer brand or your recruitment marketing appeals to your CEO, if they like it, the odds are it's not going to work, because they're not the target audience. If your CEO likes it, you're not after a new CEO. I mean, if you are, then that's a problem in itself. But they're not supposed to like the marketing, the employer branding that attracts developers, because they're not a developer. And the same goes for any other part of the business. The more specific you are, the more targeted you are, the more likely you are to find the right people, not just keep everybody happy.
That's really interesting. And by the way, Dan Kelso is an individual we should all follow as well. He's a very, very smart guy, particularly in how to do conversational style marketing on places like LinkedIn. I think he is a Brain Food subscriber, but if he isn't, he should be, because I might have just given him some business. But no, Dan Kelso, I think he's definitely a credible dude. Go and follow him. Okay.
Can I see a question from Lee in the chat? He didn't ask it in the ask a question session.
As you did he? Well, actually, he has asked it in chat. He's talking about IBM Watson. Is that the one?
Yeah, can you measure integrity?
Yeah. Let me just deal with this. Let me ask the question so people can understand it. Does IBM Watson measure things like integrity, character, persistence, tenacity? That's from Lee Candiotti. Okay, Bas, you want to give this a shot?
It, as far as I know, it doesn't measure integrity, because integrity is something which is really, really hard to measure, and we usually get it wrong in all the other assessments as well, which basically means there's no way to determine it. You know, you need a baseline for it to be exacted to. Things like tenacity, persistence, yes, it measures on the big five, and it has about 24 other character traits. I won't say it's a perfect measurement, but it's a lot better than any human judgment. It's about at 85% accuracy.
Yeah, I think that's interesting as well. I mean, let's understand, thank you, Bas, on that. Let's understand that essentially these assessments are not designed to be completely deterministic, but they're there to give some people a bit of a score and a guideline to say, hey, listen, this person has got a decent chance based on this score to have this type of performance.
But let's be very honest, no assessment has ever been 100%. It's the same as we're expecting technology to be 100% perfect, just like with self-driving cars, for example, while humans are at 60-70% perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I think I'm going to jump in and get either Ben. Actually, let's get Ben on. Mo, I'm going to get you on in a bit because I want to also talk to people who are on the operational aspect of this in front of all of these applicants. And I think Ben has certainly worked for organizations that has had high volume in. How do you manage that? Because I think technology is one a technique to do it, if you like. Obviously, apply tooling, but it could be some other stuff you could use as well. There he is, Ben Gledhill. How are you doing, sir?
Not bad, pal. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Ben, just as a quick intro for the folks who don't know you, can you just quickly intro yourself? Who it is, what it is you do?
Yeah, of course. I'm here. So hi, everyone. My name's Ben Gledhill. Been a brain fooder for a while. Been there, done that, and resourcing. Got all the t-shirts, it's all the box, etc. I'm currently the interim head of resource and transformation at Thames Water, which as a recruiter, because I still class myself as a recruiter because that's what we are, I joined on the 9th of March. So I joined during the kind of COVID drama. I've been through it all in terms of the 59 webinars on onboarding, 59 webinars on Microsoft Teams. So yeah, it's been a bit of a challenging journey for the past 3 months for that one.
Yeah, and you've tended to work for, in fact, you've got a great, interesting career, haven't you, Ben? Because you've worked for startups, you've worked for governments, you've worked academia, as I understand it. So it seems that you've had some experiences of dealing with high volume applicant flow. Can you give us some of those examples, Ben? Have you got anything you can share with us that you've done?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I guess back in the day, so probably 2012, God, I feel old, when I was at RSA Insurance, so kind of claims advisors, you know, the people that you'd ring up, I've had a crash, I've been burgled, all the rest of it. Probably the most recent and best was in my last role at Yodel. So we were doing, about 3,500, 4,000 hires a year, and probably about 1,500 of those are in peak, which is around an 8 to 10 week period. Bringing in over 1,000 people under 8 weeks is pretty, pretty stressful. And I'll be really honest with you, the role at Yodel really changed my mind in terms of the challenges of people in the volume space. Just in terms of, so, and obviously Baz kind of listens to you. Obviously, I love Baz. We have a great relationship apart from my Shrekshire comment. So my thoughts on volume at the moment is it's a really, really tough time out there, if I'm honest with you. And obviously going back to Victoria's point, you can't stop people applying for everything. You know, the country is on its arse. There are a lot of people that are really, really struggling. And I've seen a fair few comments kind of this week around, you know, changing job adverts, doing this, doing that. I think that's quite dangerous because, yet again, I think it was yourself or as Victoria said, then you're going to hit the D&I barrier in terms of not being inclusive in your approach. But one form of exclusion that we just don't see enough of is social ability. Everybody doesn't know what gamification is. Not everybody knows what psychometric profiling is or the rest of it. So I think when you hire, the things that have really worked well for me in hiring volume is it's honesty, transparency, and you've got to be really, really straightforward. So for example, when I joined Yodel, you know, we recruited delivery drivers, either employed or career-based, self-employed. It sounded like you were driving the space shuttle. It was a dream in this lovely van. It's really all the rest of it. The truth is, it's a really, really tough job. The hours are tough, and you have to deliver a set number of parcels kind of per day or per hour. So we really had a lot of success through really transparent content. So we did a lot around video and kind of driver profiles. And we didn't try to put people off the job, but we gave them a real clear indication of what that role is. And what we started to see was, I don't know, the funnel is a little bit outdated, but you started to see everybody that got to the pre-screening phase. Obviously, we use chatbots to kind of improve that kind of experience. But every single person that arrived for a face-to-face interview had a 100% idea of what that job is. And going back to Victoria's point around content, I remember when we showed the first video to our chief operating officer, and they were like, well, we're going to scare people off if that goes live. No one's going to join. And we're like, well, hang on a minute. What's worse, reality or someone joining thinking they're going to be driving a Bugatti Veyron when actually it's a Ford Transit van? So, yes, technology does help. Yes, there's bits and pieces that you can do around that. But the main things for me is honesty, transparency, and I think safety as well. You know,
what do you mean by that?
So can I comment on that, Ben? Because what you're actually saying is basically gamification in honesty. And I've seen this work in high volume roles in supermarkets, for example. The Dutch biggest supermarket brand, Albert Heijn, used to have a few thousand people applying to their traineeship, which were all highly educated. And they actually had a problem that during the second interview with the business line, a lot of them dropped out because they didn't have a realistic job preview, because they were all of a sudden told that you do work in a store as an assistant shop manager for half a year in your traineeship. And they're like, yeah, but I'm finance. Yeah, no, everybody works in the store because that's what we do. We have stores. And by giving them the realistic job preview in the process, they got people out early. Absolutely. But by giving them also, in this case, situational judgment tests, just how would you deal with this, they actually got in the characters, the type of people who put the customers on exactly the right foot, etc., as well. And that's what I mean with the gamification part. People were, you know, you got a video on the fact that you were in a store as an assistant store manager, so all of a sudden you realized, oh, crap, I'm going to be in a store for half a year. And then you've got a question, how would you deal with this situation? And I mean, it doesn't exclude each other. And I totally believe in your honesty. Absolutely. You've got that. That's where it starts. Just, I think you should add information, or actually get them to submit information where you can actually make base better decisions on.
No, I am absolutely there with you. So I say you just have to be honest. But going back to the point that I said earlier, Hum, around safety. I don't need to go into the whole COVID situation. We know where we are as a country, as a world. You know, we are suffering a little bit. And I think the one thing that I've always found with volume roles is that safety is always a key issue, and a lot of it is around real kind of when I say kind of hygiene factors. You know, if you look at kind of Maslow's kind of triangle, it's things like, you know, will I be paid on time because I have bills to pay, that if I miss that bill, I will be, you know, mortgage or rent or whatever. And that pays, that is really important in self-employed, because obviously, you know, it's around cash flow, personal, etc. A lot of volume roles might be operational. So am I in a safe working environment? You know, because obviously, you know, if you're a cool .NET developer in Shoreditch, yes, it might be about being bags or, you know, whatever. But, you know, if I'm in a volume operational role, am I going to be safe? Am I going to be paid on time? And are the working conditions where they need to be? So I wouldn't say it's dumbing down. And it does annoy me a little bit when people almost kind of dumb down to you, because they're human beings. You know, we're still dealing with people that want or have a career. It's just that they have different career aspirations. You know, their career aspirations might be, I literally just have to put food on the table. But I'm just seeing a couple of comments here from kind of Paul. And I do agree with him in terms of, you know, it's a sad fact, but recruitment is, you know, part of recruitment is rejecting candidates. And there's not a lot we can do with that. But I do think that if you do it right, in terms of the right application process, include that social mobility factor. So what kind of, what's really opened my eyes is, so I'm from Halifax, North Yorkshire, you can probably tell from the accent. I see things on Facebook and I hear things from friends. It still surprises me that not everybody has broadband. You know, a lot of people have been going to the library to apply for jobs or Tesco's or wherever. So I think I say, when you're, you know, it's not just a case of changing your job adverts, make them more factual. If you can create content that makes it really, really kind of transparent and authentic what it is, but look at new things like text messaging. You know, I don't have to apply online. I can apply by text message or, you know, kind of keep those, you know, keep those gates open, so to speak.
That's really interesting, man. I mean, I think that honesty piece is super important. And as you say, it's not about dumbing down. I think we just have to recognize that a lot of the people that organize the recruitment process are themselves coming from, you know, academic backgrounds. You know, we're coming from middle class background. We've gone to university. Usually we've done all of this type of journey. And we may have structured our processes with ourselves as a default person in mind, where in fact, you know, you got to have a look at what kind of people, what kind of work that you're actually looking to recruit. And that could be a totally different order of person. And therefore, you need to have, if you like, appropriate process, appropriate communication channel. We know, for instance, mobile and text-based communication can be more effective for a lot of, you know, manual work or location-based work where the mobile phone is the primary device. So have a think about what your candidate is. Primary device, is it keyboard or is it smartphone? In which case, that can change. Well, no, because Baz, we have to move on because we've only got 15 minutes left. So I'm going to have to say goodbye to you two gents and bring Mo Diarra on. So thank you very much for coming on, Baz van der Hartart. Thank you very much for coming on, Ben Gledhill. We're going to bring Mo on now. And I'm interested to see Mo for lots of reasons. She's obviously been a guest on the show before, but also I think from her work as a in EB for Amazon, it's quite interesting to see, you know, what her experience has been to recruit, you know, all of these different types of people there. Like how Amazon is obviously one of the most popular employers, I think, on the planet. It's probably fair to say, and has been for several years now. So volume hiring, I think, has to be on part of the thinking of how companies recruit. There she is, Mo. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
No, and thanks for hanging on to this time, Mo. For the people who don't know you, by the way, can you quickly just introduce yourself, who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, of course. And it would be good if you can also repeat your question because I kind of logged in and then your question dropped off.
But, no worries, I'll do that.
Yeah, thanks. So my name is Mo Diarra. I work at Amazon for around about a year almost. And I look after kind of employer branding and campaign strategies for the consumer org of Amazon. So everything behind Amazon.com with the focus on tech. Before this, I was involved in the kind of high volume hiring team that also takes care of employer branding. So I think that hung, that's also why you kind of connected me with this topic. And I started my career in recruitment actually at the moment the kind of economical crisis in kind of 2008 up to 2012 was in place. So when I started working at a recruitment agency, I had tons and tons of applications. Compared to what you have today and what you have in the tech space, for example. So I think I can.
No, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, this is super interesting because this is the challenge. And I think we've got a few folks on the chat stream now wrestling with this problem now, you know, where we've got overwhelming numbers of people coming in. We've heard from, you know, Victoria and Ben who were talking about, listen, authenticity and the messaging is super important because a lot of the people applying may not be relevant for the job and you got to give them the opportunity to understand that by being honest with it. Here's the job. You know, if you can't do it or don't want to do it, then, you know, self-select out. You had Bass also coming in to say, you know what, there's potentially looking at high volume advantageously. You know, you can get away from CV review then and use other techniques to manage the flow, but also improve the quality. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this? Like, if you're advising someone who's sitting there and getting, you know, 10x the number of candidates that they usually got, what would you advise them to do in the first instance to solve that problem?
Yeah, so there are multiple sides and how you can approach this, right? I mean, it also really depends on your budget and kind of the range of influence that you have and the position that you're in. But if I would kind of start at the top of the funnel, which you guys were just talking about in terms of what you present outward, I totally agree with the honesty, transparency part and what Ben also said, which also comes down to the rules that we have, that safety is a really important thing, right? So what I think that my colleagues in the specific high volume space are always trying to do is giving that realistic image of the content in terms of what is it like to work here, the amount of movies that we have saying a day in the life of, or a role explainer or things like that, just to make people aware of the different types of jobs that we have to offer. And I also agree with, I saw it in the chat as well, in terms of the connecting with needs of people, but also being visible in places where they are. So it's really important to connect with the right target group. But, you know, connecting with the right target group at this moment might not be relevant because people are already coming your way, right? So I see, from my point of view, I see employer branding as kind of, you know, recruitment, retention, and engagement. And if you don't need to do the recruitment part, the focus basically shifts towards maybe engagement a little bit more and also retention. And what I see and in like, you know, I think a lot of businesses right now is that the retention piece is also not that challenging anymore because people are more conservative when it comes to changing jobs. In times of crisis, everybody just holds on to what they have. So that leaves engagement as basically the last focus point. And what I would then say is that it's all about candidate experience and communication. So, you know, it's really easy said to write a good job description, but do it. Like, it's so hard to get the right kind of skill set out there and also the right description of how somebody's days looks like. Sorry, my English today is not really proper. But also, for example, what I would recommend is just small tweaks, like working with a clear closing date. So just communicate, hey, we're opening this vacancy and it will close in a week or so. Communicate about what's next, and preferably in a personalized way. But, you know, this is also something that we, you know, can't always do. And one of the things that we communicate on our website is that we're unfortunately not always able to make personal contact with everybody who submits a resume, but you can check your status in your application profile and also review roles that you applied for or look into other roles that might connect with that specific one. So that is kind of an engagement piece. You know, you try to facilitate the person even though you're not able to connect with them on a personal level. And one of the things that I used to do is just develop a talent pool, because, you know, this is also a time, and on the other hand, where you can connect with people who would never be interested in communicating with you because they're good. So,
you know what, Mo, you've said some really interesting things there, including some, I think, immediate points that people could practically implement. So for instance, like shorten the amount of time the ad stays live. Like if you have to publish this thing live, we probably have it all set to default 30 days. Have you checked your defaults? I mean, oftentimes we haven't. And we just like, cause we're automatic. It's already gone into this, it was systematized. We just create the job description in the ATS. It's already plugged into a multi-posting tool. We post it in our ATS. It goes out to 100 places. It's set for 30 days. Maybe you don't need it 30 days. You need it like for 2 days. Maybe you don't need it posted. So check
and
your
also, totally. And one of the things that Benjamin is now saying in the chat is that heat maps often show that job seekers are not really reading the job description in detail. That's true. But then please be sure that you capture the right content on the top of the funnel. like the top of the page, I think. Yeah. If people read it in like a sense shaping way, just make sure that all relevant and most important information is right there. And
bottom line up front, that's what you got to do. The bottom line, every job description needs to have a bottom line up front. So if that's not the job title, it needs to have basically one, two lines to describe what the heck this thing is without flowery language. Like I think probably gone as when we were kind of candidate short, let's say, and we might still be candidate short in certain sort of segments.
It's not over.
But we might need to actually sort of not have a universalizing impulse with how we write job descriptions. You know, we always say, let's standardize everything. Actually, no, have a think about what your market is and whether you actually have a demand problem there or a supply problem, and then amend it accordingly.
In a previous company, we used to write job descriptions in code. And you might think that that's really strange, but it was super appealing for a specific target group that we were audience in, that we were connecting with at the time.
Which actually is a way to deter people as well. Again, deter with a soft D, because let's say I was creating a job for drivers in Ben's case, there were a lot of delivery drivers. Maybe I could construct a job description that is kind of codified into a person that understands the driving world. You know, maybe that's where the content needs to be. Maybe the video I'm just imagining could be shot within the cab of a vehicle. So that, you know, the person who might be thinking, hey, I want an office job for a cool startup. Guess what? This isn't it. You're going to be in a car and you're driving, you know. So there's ways in which you can sort of create this content to speak specifically to a certain segment, and that will inherently, it will not interest people that are not interested in that particular thing. So again, with Bas's point, it could also improve the quality of
that kind of thing. Totally. So you know, these are kind of more, I think, my practical points on this topic, but ideally I would love to kind of work with an automated way, which basically pre-screens people before they apply for jobs. That would be the dream. If you look at what Bas said in terms of like the IBM AI algorithm thing and what you're just saying now, like deterring applications with small d, without excluding anybody, because I think that that's also really important. That needs to be said. If you're visible within the audience and everybody can be part of it, then it's just, you know, the next step to filter that out. And it would be super awesome if you can just pre-screen or ask, let's say, 5 knockout questions, which basically make it clear that a person is not suitable for the job in terms of, are you living in the location, in the right location, if you don't have the possibility to relocate, as we don't really have anymore in certain countries right now, right? Or are you, I don't know, do you have the right skills? And that can be a certain background or tech language or maybe even a driver license. The amount of applications that you're kind of filtering out before a person applies can be super helpful. So I should definitely say that you need to pre-screen or filter if possible.
Well, maybe this is where a chatbot comes in. I don't know whether you've got any thoughts on that, guys. Because a chatbot would be the thing, right? So if you had some sort of thing on the website to say, you know, if a candidate has any questions, that may be the first landing point and they can qualify themselves. Oh, do you need a driving license applicable in the EU? Yes, you do. Oh, I don't have that. Then don't, you know not to apply. Or you may then be given other opportunities to say, hey, sorry, this job's not available for you, but perhaps here's a direction for you to go, rather than stick your CV into a process and clog it up because you're not going to be relevant at some point.
Ben did it at Yodel, like you said, and I was looking at something similar for apprenticeship schemes when I was working with, I think it was Vodafone at the time, was it Vodafone or Santander, I can't remember which, and actually using a chatbot instead of a landing page to apply for a job, you were immediately landing on a page that is just a chat, and you communicate by answering these questions. It filters the jobs for you and sends you to the areas you'll potentially be better at based on other things that interest you, or you can watch videos in the conversation, say you're interested in this here. Like you said, a day in the life video, hear from Antonio who does cybersecurity, or hear from Jess who does marketing, which one of these seems like a kind of day-to-day you'd be interested in, and follow that route. It takes a bit longer, But it means you should theoretically get more of the right applicants for the right jobs. People, a lot of this chucking your CV at any job you come across is because people are panicking that they're not getting responses, but that panic creates over application, which creates less response because they're just applying for anything rather than what they should, what they really should and would be selected for. So one problem is creating the other by giving people the freedom to apply to everything. They're getting less responses because of it. And we kind of, as recruiters, we have an obligation to actually help people make the right choices, not just let them spam. They're now spamming us like we spam you. We used to spam them in mail shots and we're getting upset about it. And think, well, actually, you do this and now you're kind of getting the reverse treatment. So well, I think we have a bit of an obligation there to help.
You know what? Can I just say one thing as well? I think a lot of the reasons why candidates do send so many is because of the lack of response, that they've been trained as job seekers not to expect a response. So that their expectations are so low that they're thinking, right, these recruiter bastards, I'm just going to keep sending as many as I can because they're never going to get back to me. And this is, again, where automation can help. If there was a chatbot, for instance, I'm already getting some sort of haptic feedback on when I'm messaging back. I'm getting stuff, and that will make me feel, hey, at least I'm getting recognized a little bit. And actually, Mo, you mentioned something about being able to track my own applicant process through the thing. I mean, is that something is implemented in the Amazon flow, or have you seen sort of technology of this type? Because I think this is one of the ways to do it. Self-serve, you know, get the candidate to go in and say, oh, I'm at third stage interview, or oh, you've been rejected, here's the feedback. Great. I don't need to bother a recruiter for that. I already have the information I need.
That's as you mentioned, it's part of our process. I think that Amazon in general and the HR behind it are driven on self-service and being able to find the information, and it really starts with your application process. But I also believe that that's the way to go in terms of automating certain things. And if you don't have any access to all these expensive tools, just look into your ATS system if you can set up an automated response or something, you know, or time that even so people have the feeling that you're engaging with them anyway. Automation definitely in that sense.
There's definitely ways to do it. And I think, you know, before COVID hit, I would say a lot of the focus was at that side of the, at that stage. Like, how do we, there was a sourcing element. There's always like the interest in sourcing, but increasingly we were seeing like matching services that Bass was on about. We were also seeing chatbots going in to have this conversational stuff. We're seeing better self-serve type products. I think we see some sort of onboarding guys come in, and ATS is providing a bit more transparency. So I think we're all doing what we can, even though we probably now never anticipated this like surge of applicants that we're getting at this point, which is obviously something we're struggling to handle with, I guess. Okay, let's leave it with some final thoughts because we're running out of time. Victoria, let's go to you. Quick message for people who are, managing massive applicant flow. We've talked about sort of the messaging being honest. Is there anything else that you need to, that this person need to bear in mind in order to do this better?
The people applying right now are very likely in a very difficult situation. They're being made redundant. They can't pay their bills, furlough. Some of them may not have even been furloughed. You've got people in some horrible situations. Remember that they're human. They're actually just asking for help, to help to get them out of a situation they very likely don't want to be in, and they certainly through no fault of their own are in. So if you can treat people with the respect that they deserve, it will come back and it will work out better for you in the long run.
Yeah. How about you, Mo? Any last words for people struggling with volume hiring right now?
Yeah, sure. I think that it's just really important to remember for all of us that people will remember you and the company based on how you're treating your candidates today, how you're treating them during these times, like times of crisis, and just as what Victoria's saying. And it really leaves a mark on, you know, the company's brand. So, yeah. But just keep that in mind if you reach out to a candidate or not.
We have a definite responsibility there, and it's probably one of the ways in which the recruitment role is going to change, because we've been so optimized to acquire the candidate, quote unquote, and close the candidate. That's where all of our energy and focus is, and candidate experience and rejecting candidates has always been like an admin task that we have to do. But maybe the role needs to shift somewhat, so that we care a lot more about how we're dealing with the non-successful candidates, and thinking, if you like, longer-term relationships, branding down the line, things of that type.
Totally.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Modiara, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back anytime. By the way, you're still in Holland right now, right? Are you in the Netherlands, I hope?
Yeah, I'm in the Netherlands, yes.
Cool. When are you coming back to the UK? Because I think that's got to be not too long, right?
No, it's in a week or so, and then I need to go in isolation for two.
Oh, wow. Is that quarantine already happening? So I have no idea. It is.
Yeah, it's since the 15th of June.
Got it. So you have to then not talk to anybody. Okay, I see.
Yeah, but that's all right. I can talk with people. I just can't go outdoors, but that's all right.
I'd use it as an excuse not to talk to anybody either, you know, but no. Okay, welcome back to the UK when you do it. And Victoria, thanks for joining me and helping me co-host Brain Food Live on Air. It's been great having you. Okay, that's it, everybody. Thank you for watching. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Fascinating conversation about volume hiring. I think a lot more to dig into as a topic. We'll be back next week. We're going to be talking agency side. We have the CEO of S3 joining us, Mark Dorman. He's going to be joining us to talk about how COVID-19 post-pandemic world is affecting a recruitment agency business. So that's like a $1 billion turnover organization. That's going to be worth watching. Okay, I'll see you next week, folks.
Cool.
Bye.
Great weekend. Bye.